Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, local Hanukkah celebrations take on a somber tone this year. In Sullivan County, the local Jewish community gathered for a public menorah lighting, finding comfort and unity in the wake of the tragic mass shooting at Australia's Bondi Beach. Jason Dole was there and reports coming up. As communities across the region think about how to care for shared spaces, two towns are taking different but complementary approaches. In Honesdale, residents are being invited to help imagine what could replace the borough's aging Central Park playground. And in Tustin, town leaders are stepping back to take stock of forests, waterways, and open space. The River Reporter's Liam Mayo joins us to explain. Plus, the latest activities for families and kids at the Western Sullivan Public Libraries and music that connects generations. That's the latest episode of Full Steam Ahead, the podcast. Coming up after this hour's news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Stocks opened mixed this morning as a delayed report from the Labor Department showed a jump in the unemployment rate. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped nearly 70 points in early trading.
U.S. employers added just 64,000 jobs in November as the unemployment rate climbed to 4.6%. The economy recorded a net loss of jobs in October as tens of thousands of federal workers who took buyouts earlier in the year were officially dropped from government payrolls. Job tallies for both October and November were delayed by the six-week government shutdown. Healthcare and construction saw job gains in November, while factories and delivery companies cut jobs. The softening job market means employers are not having to raise wages as fast as they were. Average wages in November were up 3.5% from a year ago. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Authorities in Providence, Rhode Island have released new photographs of the suspect in last weekend's deadly mass shooting at Brown University. Two people were killed and nine others injured as they attended a study group. Rhode Island Attorney General Peter Nerona says authorities are asking for the public's help to find the suspect.
We don't know where specifically he is right now, but we can and have been able to trace his movements both before and after the shooting in the immediate vicinity of the Brown, Barris, and Holly building. And so, you know, piecing that evidence together, we are making progress. And we expect as more tips are coming in and more, we're going to be able to push out, I think, some more video evidence.
He spoke to NPR's Morning Edition. Police in Los Angeles say that today they'll give their homicide case to prosecutors. This is over the killings of Hollywood director Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle. L.A. police say they suspect the Reiner's 32-year-old son, Nick, is responsible. Nick Reiner is being held without bail. He has not been charged, and he has not made an initial court appearance. California's governor is hiring the former director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, whom President Trump fired. NPR's Ping Huang reports this is to help create a new public health initiative with nationwide reach.
It's called the Public Health Network Innovation Exchange. California Governor Gavin Newsom says it's a direct response to the dismantling of federal public health systems.
We're not trying to replicate anything at scale. We're not naive about the size of the federal government. It's not a shadow CDC we're creating, but it's a shield to what's going on.
Newsom has hired Susan Menares, the CDC director that Trump fired in August, and Dr. Deb Howry, a former top CDC official, to lead the effort. It's meant to be a collaboration between states to better detect and respond to emerging health threats and to maintain trust in science-driven public health policy. It's currently funded for $4 million from California's budget. Ping Huang, NPR News.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now down 130 points. It's NPR. New York Attorney General Letitia James is suing package delivery company UPS. This is for allegedly stealing tens of millions of dollars in pay from seasonal workers. They deliver packages during the holidays. From member station WABE, Melissa Fato reports, UPS says the allegations are unfounded.
James accuses the shipping company of forcing some workers to clock in well after their shift started and deducting pay for lunch breaks they never took. The suit also claims UPS repeatedly failed to properly compensate workers who assist drivers with deliveries and others who use their own cars on the job. James says those wages add up to about $45 million over 6 years. The lawsuit seeks back pay pay and penalties, and a court order forcing UPS to end off-the-clock work. In a statement, UPS said it offers industry-leading pay for more than 26,000 employees in New York. For NPR News, I'm Melissa Fato in Atlanta.
Lawmakers are getting ready to unveil a new statue in the U.S. Capitol. It's of the late civil rights activist Barbara Rose Johns. She was a teenager in Virginia when she led student strikes against segregation and poor conditions in her unequal school. Her work got the attention of lawyers with the NAACP. That investigation led to the groundbreaking U.S. Supreme Court decision Brown v. Board overturning segregated schools. Johns died in 1991. The statue will portray her as a teenager. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Wallace Foundation, an independent, nonpartisan research foundation collaborating with grantees and partners in the arts, school leadership, and youth development. More at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for being with us. Hanukkah celebrations look a little different this year after the mass shooting in Australia. Over the last two nights of Hanukkah, members of the local Jewish community came together for public menorah lightings, seeking comfort and unity. This year's gatherings carry added weight after the deadly attack on Australia's Bondi Beach, serving as a symbol of reflection and resilience for the community. Radio Catskills' Jason Dole reports from Parksville and Monticello.
It's late Sunday afternoon on the first night of Hanukkah. Folks have gathered in Parksville, New York, to light the community menorah. It's blue, and it stands at least 10 feet tall, with each of the lights representing some aspect of local history. The train that used to stop in Parksville, a classic Silver Age Sullivan County hotel, examples of local wildlife. And although this gathering is small, Sullivan County Sheriff's deputies are on hand for security. And it's very cold, which, in a way, only underscores the importance of gathering together to share the light. Here's Hope Blecker, event organizer who was key to bringing the menorah to Parksville.
This is our fourth year, I think.
Wow.
So, yeah, I remember building it and getting the grant for it from Sullivan 180. So it's a beautiful thing.
So what can people expect?
We have Richie Cheeger, who's coming to lead us in songs. We knew this year we have from Lemonade in Liberty. We have Jelly Donuts, often called Sufgun Yot. And maybe next year we'll figure out a way to get latkes. I'm not sure. And we have dreidels. We have a table, so we have dreidels that people can take and some coloring and crayons for some kids or adults. And I'm looking forward to having people to come together today.
Parksville, it's one of the smaller hamlets
yes.
of Liberty. I don't know that Parksville has an active congregation, or does it?
So not its own congregation in terms of like a conservative or reform. There are Orthodox congregations that are active year-round. And but that being said, on a day, a Hanukkah brings everybody together. So whether people are Jewish, not Jewish, or someone who just said, oh, I'm not Jewish, but I'm coming because this brings people together and I want to feel the love. And I was like, that's a beautiful thing to say.
You know, you're always doing events in the community that are about bringing people together, but also about, you know, looking at hope, looking at ways towards peace, ways towards people living together and sharing the beauty of the world together. And you also do things that bring attention to the rich Jewish culture of the area and the living Jewish culture. And now we're unfortunately, there's once again, you know, global violence threatening the Jewish community. Here on the first day of Hanukkah, this is what's on our minds. How are you feeling?
So I did have two people contact me today to see if we were going to have extra security, and we had already taken care of that. Someone asked, because of it, should we cancel? And I said, no, that's exactly why we have to meet. So it's a little bit of a hesitation, but when we're all together, I feel like that just leaves. And it's like, this is what we're here for, to show people that we can be united in Parksville, in Sullivan County, in New York, and that we can shine the light. And regardless of how we feel or think, people know they're coming together for something special.
Hanukkah, and it's a festival of lights. I mean, does that help when we're looking at this reality that Jews in America are under threat, that there is rising anti-Semitism?
Yes. There is rising anti-Semitism, and I think the symbolism of Hanukkah is something special that people can say, you know, we are a light, we come together, we want to shine a light, and let this camaraderie be a light to others, that we are going to stay together.
And here's Richie Cheeger of Temple Shalom in Monticello leading the prayer in Parksville before the menorah lighting.
Okay, the first night of Hanukkah, we do all three prayers, and if anybody is interested in Yiddish, we have a Yiddish, conversational Yiddish group that we learn Yiddish on Wednesday morning, 10:30 every week at the library in Monticello. And everybody's welcome. Everybody. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. Everybody?
Baruch atah Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam, shehecheyanu v'kiyemanu, Vehigiyonu lazman hazeh.
The next night, Monday, is the second night of Hanukkah, and I'm in Monticello, New York, where the Landfield Avenue Synagogue is once again taking their menorah lightings all around the community, using Hanukkah as an opportunity to gather and celebrate, yes, but also to honor those doing good work in the community, with a different organization being represented each night. This night, they've gathered in front of the Ted Strobel Rec Center to honor the EMS responders. Here's Dr. Peter Allen Chester, president of Landfield Avenue Synagogue.
Good evening, Freilich Hanukkah. Thank you all for joining us on this second night of Hanukkah. Summer is right around the corner. Just put that in your head, and we'll be good. In the spirit of this holiday, which is the Festival of Lights, we'd like to recognize those in our community who light the way, and in lighting the way, they keep us safe, they keep us healthy, and they are on call 24/7. The emergency medical services here in Sullivan County are woefully understaffed. They're woefully underpaid, they're woefully under anything, but that does not stop them from setting the platinum standard of service for all of our friends and neighbors. So this second night of Hanukkah, we honor and we recognize those emergency medical services who are on call 24/7. Second night of Hanukkah, Festival of Lights, two prayers. It's shorter. It's one of the few Jewish services that's short. The rest of them, we thank God for days on end and then let the chips fall where they may. I'd also like to extend a welcome to Yaakov Mendelovic, who has brought light to Landfield Avenue Synagogue as he has become part of our family with wonderful Mazdos School for Girls that's now housed at Landfield Avenue Synagogue. So we thank him and we welcome him.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech olam asher kidshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu lehadlik ner shel Chanukah.
Happy Hanukkah, and yeah, we feel very safe here in Monticello. My name is Yaakov Mendelowitz. I live here in Monticello, and I am the administrator from the private school called Mozdos Monticello. And we have a boys' school and a girls' school. The girls' school is stationed in 18 Landfield Avenue Synagogue, which we are very grateful that they made place and room for the children here. For the next generation, we feel safe because of the law enforcement professionals that called immediately right after the attack in Australia. They called and they asked, what do you need? We will come, we will protect the public candle lightings, we'll protect by the shuls, by the schools. And we are very, very grateful for that. And yeah, obviously there's anti-Semitism out, but I don't think that anyone in my community will feel it here in Sullivan County. The sheriff, the chief of the village police, they're all here to help and protect and make sure that everyone feels safe. And in Hanukkah, yeah, you're told that Hanukkah is all about lighting the darkness. It's cold, it's the shortest days in the year. It's like the when it's getting real dark outside, and that's the time when even a tiny light can spread can shift away the darkness, which is that's the meaning of Hanukkah.
It's also a holiday that's big for the kids, for the children. Absolutely. And you work with children. Like, what do you say to the children in times like these?
What we say for children is, what are we doing Hanukkah? We're putting up a small light, and the next night we're putting two, and the night after that three. This is just start with just the little steps. Light it up once, the next night do twice, then the next night do a third one, and then you will light up the whole world.
Thank you so much for talking to us out in the cold.
Thank you so much. All appreciate
right, have
it.
Have a good night.
I'm Lori Oristano James, and I am the secretary to the board of directors at Lanfield Avenue Synagogue. I've been a member of Lanfield Avenue Synagogue. My parents were members, you know, so we've been part of the tradition of lighting the menorahs in the village of Monticello for years. A couple of years ago, we extended our menorah reach, if you will, to the hospital and to the Teddy Strobel building. The Teddy Strobel building, we've got a beautiful piece of artwork here that we commissioned locally to create a new menorah. And what's really unique about this menorah, if you come close enough and you look at it, it's the theme of what Sullivan County is all about. So you will see doves of peace, and you will see peace signs, and you will see vines of hope and vines of love. Because the Hanukkah menorah, the actual lights are, although we tell the story of the oil and the oil lasting for 8 days, the reality is it was the perseverance of the Jewish people. It was the perseverance that was really being recognized. And then years later, they said we should celebrate it by creating this menorah and lights and doing everything. But the lights were really supposed to be lights of peace and lights of love and lights of kindness. And, you know, with what's going on in the world today, especially, you know, the tragedy that just happened in Australia, you think about things going on at Brown University, you know, all of those types of different things that are happening in our world today. And you can get up and you can be very, very negative. But Hanukkah is really the festival of lights, the light meaning hope, the light meaning peace, the light meaning love, showing us the way, showing us the guidance to a better tomorrow.
What's your favorite Hanukkah tradition, whether that's a thing that you do, a thing that you eat, or just a memory that you love bringing back this time of year?
So for me, my Hanukkah tradition has come from my family. I light four menorahs in my house. One is my grandfather's that when he came off the boat, he brought it over with him. So I have my grandfather's menorah, I have my father's menorah, my mother's menorah, and then the menorah that they purchased for me. So I light all four menorahs in my home. I lost my parents when I was in high school, and I've kept that tradition alive. So I remember lighting my grandfather's menorah with my parents. So I light their menorahs in memory of them, in memory of my grandfather, and light mine to continue the tradition of the family.
You going to do that now?
I absolutely am.
All right, well, get home and get warm, and happy Hanukkah.
Thank you so much, and thanks for coming and covering the story and making sure that people know what the true story of Hanukkah is.
Oh, Hanukkah, Hanukkah, a time to remember, a joyful, jolly holiday that comes.
For Radio Catskill, together. I'm Jason Dole.
Every day for 8 days, dreidels, crispy little lots.
Thank you, Jason Dole, for that report. And Hanukkah celebrations continue throughout the region. Just highlighting a few of them, tonight at 5:15, law enforcement will be honored at the Village Hall in Monticello, that event being held by the Lanfield Avenue Synagogue. In Rock Hill, on Wednesday at 5:45, the Rock Hill Business and Community Association will hold a menorah lighting. Also coming up in the Hanukkah celebrations throughout the region in Pennsylvania, the Jewish Fellowship of Hemlock Farms is holding a Latkefest and supper and singing on December 19th from noon to 4, and also then again at 6. In Honesdale, Congregation Beth Israel is hosting a Torah study at the synagogue on Saturday, December 20 at 9:30 a.m. And in Liberty on the 20th, they're lighting the tallest menorah. Shabbat and Liberty officials will be there at 8 p.m. The local region, just a few of those events happening for Hanukkah. We'll take a break, and when we come back, two towns and two different approaches to outdoor space and community. We'll find out how they're being used and getting people involved to share a goal of making sure the value of the land is protected. This is Radio Chatskill.
This week on This American Life. Nearly every night in Portland, left-wing protesters and right-wing streamers face off in the streets. But it's not like you think. They know each other really well. These are right-wing streamers at the apartment of one of the protesters. That's this week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
It's that time of the year, celebrating the holidays with the Swing of Jazz. This year, A Jazz Piano Christmas looks back on 25 years of live performances from the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. We'll hear some of the most memorable performances from a who's who of the jazz piano tradition on A Jazz Piano Christmas from NPR Music.
Sunday night at 8 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. A pair of outdoors-related stories now from the region that focus on how communities are shaping and caring for shared spaces. In Honesdale, a grassroots placemaking project is underway to gather public input on a replacement for the borough's Central Park playground. And in Tustin, town leaders recently held a public hearing on a natural resources inventory, a tool meant to help guide future conservation and land use decisions. The River Reporter's Liam Mayo has been following both of these efforts, and he joins us now with more. Liam, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
So you're reporting on these two different efforts in the region that both center on this on community involvement in shared spaces. Why do you think that local governments and community groups are kind of putting more emphasis right now on public input when it comes to these outdoor and communal spaces?
Well, I think there's, over the past couple of years and decades, and there's the past while, there's been a growing understanding in the importance of our natural spaces, and a growing sort of effort from people to get involved. In Honesdale, there's been, this is sort of the placemaking efforts that are happening now are the next step in a series of placemaking efforts that have been happening, including last summer, sort of a placemaking effort in the public park that turned the destruction of two trees into a opportunity for public art. In Tustin, this natural resources inventory is kind of a re-updating and reaffirming of an effort that initially sort of started around 2011, or there was a natural resources inventory created in 2011, but that effort fell off a little bit after that. So, I think there's just a growing understanding of in the importance that of outdoor spaces and recreational spaces to our communities, and a growing desire from people who live in these communities to get involved in making sure these spaces exist and making sure they serve the places they and the people they are designed to serve.
Let's remind folks about what's happening with the Central Park Playground in Honesdale. We've talked about this before, but why does it need to be replaced? And what does the placemaking project actually mean in practice for residents?
The playground equipment in Honesdale Central Park Playground was removed in October. The inciting incident for it was kind of a report that indicated there were certain problems with the tire mulch being used as ground cover for that playground, that it was impacting the health of the trees in the park. But the playground equipment was also removed to create kind of a blank canvas for a new playground or a new park to come in that could potentially be better, could potentially be ADA compliant in a way that the previous park was not. However, after the playground equipment became removed, there was this grassroots effort, the People's Playground Project, that started up that said, hey, as you guys, the borough, are thinking about what to put in place in this playground, you guys really need to consider what the public would want to see in that playground. And we think we could be that connecting tissue, making sure that the voices of the people are heard in, quote unquote, the halls of power, or just, Honesdale Borough Hall, as the case may be. So this project, the aims are to hold public hearings, to put out a survey, to really just gather as much input from the public as possible to help the borough design what is going to come in to replace the playground equipment that was taken away. The idea is to have some form of playground equipment installed over this coming summer, but to like imagine the whole redesign of the playground as something that will be finished more into 2027 rather than within the next couple of months.
How's the borough getting that input from the community? Is it surveys, workshops? What are they doing, and who's encouraged to participate?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody is encouraged to participate, particularly, you know, stakeholders in the Honesdale community. As I understand it, there will be public hearings. There will be a survey. There is a website. I think it's just peoplesplaygroundproject.com. Just checking on that real quick. Yeah, peoplesplaygroundproject.com. And then the borough has agreed to partner with the People's Playground Project, this sort of grassroots effort to work together to make sure that that input actually, you know, is reflected in the final design of the playground.
Yeah, and it looks like in your reporting that between now and July, the group is planning to conduct 2 to 3 surveys and 2 to 3 public meetings, in addition to the other means of engaging the community, and then they're going to start fundraising for that new equipment. Now, across the river in Tustin, talk about the town's recently held public hearing on its natural resources inventory. What is that, and why is it so important?
Yeah, so there are sort of two plans that the town is preparing to sort of finally adopt. The natural resources inventory is the town taking a look at all of its natural resources, doing like wetland mapping and geology mapping, and also sort of writing narratives about the various historic sites in Tustin. And mapping those all out in sort of one gathered document. The idea is that, you know, if you want to be able to conserve what you have or be able to shape development in a way that respects what is already there, you kind of need to know what is already there. So that's the natural resources inventory. The natural resources inventory also feeds into a separate document, the open space and recreation plan, which sort of goes a step further and says, okay, what are the town's open spaces, but also like should we think about bringing these into the future? Just a quote from the plan itself: it establishes a vision for a townwide network of open spaces, public recreation, and natural habitats. The plan will create a roadmap to ensure an appropriate balance of open space, public access, natural resources, and public recreational opportunities.
Yeah, it's interesting in the course of the reporting to understand that like the town, it's not as if they weren't aware of the natural resources and you know, the stewardship of them. They actually had a natural resource inventory that was completed in 2011, but that was never adopted. And so like, you know, 14 years later, they're realizing, oh, it's inactive. It's also outdated. Things weren't electronic. So they really do need to kind of step up and revise all of this. How long does this process seem like it might take for them to, you know, get this back up and running, basically, or approved?
Yeah, I think they're getting fairly close to approving it. I believe within the next meeting or two, it'll be at the point where they can approve it. But it's taken sort of a while to get to this point. There's been work with consultants, various different consultants to both like do the surveying and also, you know, bring the technical knowledge needed to make sure all this is correct. There were also a series of public workshops, a community survey, a series of stakeholder group meetings to gather feedback from the community. So this isn't, I guess, as grassroots of a thing as the People's Playground Project. Like, mm-hmm. This is an official, you know, document being created by the town that gets wrapped up into all of the bureaucracy of municipality, but it has that same ethos of, okay, if we're going to really, as a community, understand and preserve the natural resources that we have, we need to involve the community in shaping how we do that and in the process of creating these documents.
Yeah, when you look at these two stories side by side, they do show different approaches to stewardship, but they're showing approaches to stewardship, which is a good thing, and how communities in the region are thinking about long-term planning and preservation. Anything that stood out to you as you compare these two stories in that effort?
I think the only thing that would stand out to me is just the idea that, you know, governments and these like nonprofits and these community efforts can, you know, put all this stuff into place, and they can hold the public hearings, and they can put out the surveys, and they can do all of these things to try and gather input from the public. But the public really needs to show up to those to make sure their voices get heard. So I would just encourage anybody listening to, you know, if something like this pops up in your community, or, you know, if it maybe doesn't, but like you think there might be something that you would want to share your voice on, make sure and share your voice. Because again, the government can like put out the milk and cookies for the public to show up on Christmas evening, in a metaphor that I think I am butchering as I'm coming up with it. But Santa still needs to come down the chimney.
There
people
you go.
Still need to show up.
Still need to
and,
show up.
And participate for the magic to happen.
I mean, maybe if they had more cookies, more people would show up. I'm just saying. That's Leah.
I will say these events often have pretty good refreshment spreads at them. So that is a perk.
There's a good tip there for folks listening. That's Liam Mayo, the River Reporter. He is talking to us about some community planning projects for open space in our area. You can read about both of those stories in theriverreporter.com. Thank you, Liam. And we'll talk to you next week just before the holiday.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the latest edition of the Full Steam Ahead podcast, Judy and Gary Siegel are back with another episode. This time they're talking with the Levins about music, family, and community, and how art can bring people together in meaningful ways. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole, letting you know that this month on Radio Catskill, we'll be taking a look back at the biggest local news stories of the year and showcasing the work of our amazing news team. Look, I've been here for decades, and I've never seen anything like 2025. We had more reporters making more quality news than ever before, and none of that would have been possible without you. Another thing that I never saw before this year? 24% of our budget disappearing overnight. You know, the defunding of public media was a shock. It continues to threaten the good work that we do, but it has not stopped that work, and again, that's thanks to listeners like you who stood with us. I thank you so much for that. And I ask that you stand with us again. We're trying to make our year-end goal, and right now, your donation will have triple the impact. From now until December 31st, gifts of $1,000 or less will be matched one-to-one by Newsmatch and by an anonymous longtime Radio Catskill supporter. You make a one-time donation before the end of the year, it will be tripled. Become a sound supporter, all 12 of your monthly donations will be tripled. Plus, gifts of $100 and more will also be entered for a chance to win a two-night stay at the Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast. A renovated farmhouse sleeps four, located near the top of Hoke Mountain Road in the town of Walton. Go to WJFFradio.org, WJFFradio.org, to give today. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR, supported by listeners like you. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Judy and Gary Siegel are the co-founders of the STEAM Fund and the hosts of the podcast Full Steam Ahead, which highlights artists and changemakers using creativity to strengthen communities. Their latest episode features the husband and wife folk duo, the Levins, exploring how music can bridge generations, foster connection, inspire social good. Judy and Gary join us now to talk about the episode. Hello, welcome.
Good morning.
We've had you on before. We should also note that the STEAM Fund is a financial supporter of Radio Catskill. This is episode 5 of Full Steam Ahead. What inspired your desire to focus on this duo, the Levins, and their music on this one?
So the Levins are wonderful and fascinating, and we love giving artists the opportunity to tell their stories, and they have great stories. So they are integral to the community, the Jewish community in Sullivan County. Their members are the folk duo that runs a cantorial spiritual leadership of the synagogue in Livingston Manor, and also Temple Shalom in Monticello. And then on top of that, they have this great connection to the folk world around the country and actually internationally. So it's like, oh, this is a story we want to tell.
Yeah, so we actually had a connection through our temple. As you know, Judy is the president of the Congregation Agudas Achim in Livingston Manor, and I'm the treasurer. So it's one of our life sentences, I think.
But there are more people than us that are involved.
So many more that are involved. But the Levins are our cantorial duo. But they do much more than just the spiritual part of their music. They have a secular
following
too. Where they've just recently put out an album. Their story is also connects to Jack Hardy, who is a folk, mm-hmm. The folk circles and all of that back in the day. So there's a lot of connections that we felt, would be great to be able to get their story out into the world and let people know who they are and what makes them tick and also where they will be.
We have a little clip of episode 5 where, Gary, you're starting out with hard-hitting questions here. Hold on.
What do you want the listeners and the viewers to know about the Levins?
Well, they're happy people. Start with that.
We strive to be the bridge between communities and promote a little harmony and love into the world. That's our main, the gist of our quest.
Okay, that's a good start, and I think we'll probably hear more about that through the course of this podcast. But we'll go way back now to you guys came from opposite ends of the country. Talk about that. Where are you from?
Middle and the other end. Yeah.
Oh, the middle and the other end. How did you find each other, and where did you come from?
So I started in Iowa for many years, and ended up after teaching for a few years in Iowa. I went and played piano on a cruise ship in Alaska, visited people down the West Coast, and I thought, I am moving here, and ended up in San Francisco. And that was my journey from the Midwest to the...
Iowa, Alaska, San Francisco.
Yes. Okay. And
was I living in New York now, but doing it in reverse, started in Florida and North Miami Beach, and then went to Florida State University, up the top of the state, and then went to Boulder, Colorado, then went to the Bay Area, met Julia, and we moved to New York.
And there's a little bit of the episode 5 of the Full Steam Ahead podcast with Levins, interviewed by Gary and Judy Siegel. And they talk about their premise of what they like to bring to folks. They talk about their background. They also talk a lot about their faith and how that influences their work, social consciousness. How did that theme resonate with you guys during the conversation and what you know of them?
You know, so as the president of the synagogue, the Livingston Manor Synagogue, Agudas Achim, it's a Reform synagogue, and it's very spiritual. It's not a strong organized religion component, although that is the base. We used to be Orthodox, now we're not. So they brought to the table this beautiful music that helped us find our spirituality more than the rote structure that a lot of other more traditional, more orthodox synagogues are. So with us, with the Levins, they bring this great energy and really make you enjoy the experience and find your spirituality in it. So that's what resonated with us for the synagogue. And then as musicians, they're just really strongly spiritual and energetic and fun and kind.
Yeah, and I think just to piggyback on what Judy said, that they infuse music for the prayers during the Shabbat services that just really bring a lot of joy to everybody and makes it so it's not cumbersome, I guess you would say. Brought up in an Orthodox synagogue, I would say, in my opinion, it was cumbersome. Nothing was in English really, and you learned Hebrew and you learned the prayers, but But now they're sung in these wonderful melodies that they have either written or adapted to be able to make it so that it's relevant and resonates with all the congregants mm-hmm. there.
You know, it's an era where I think a lot of people are looking for connections in their community and to find ways to come together with a really good energy. And about, you know, the synagogue in Livingston Manor, and this is not an interview about that, but they welcome, and we welcome with open arms, everybody of every faith to come and connect and be part of this community of the United States, where we really need a kind connection.
Yeah, and just picking up on that, and as we talk about this in light of the tragedy in Australia during this time of Hanukkah, we had a story earlier about the local public menorah lightings in Parksville and Monticello, and how that is definitely a backdrop as to what's going on. And so the celebrations seem a little different, a little more somber, but there's still that hope and there's still that light that is celebrated. And in this case, for the Levins and their story and what you're talking about and this path to God that's spiritual and maybe less strict, why is that especially relevant right now, do you think?
It's just such a need. I think people are feeling, there's so much anger out there and there's so much violence and you're hit with it every day, everywhere you turn, in every conversation somehow turns to one of those horrible tragedies. So what they bring to the table and their view, I think, of Judaism, if I can speak for them, is that it's about love and kindness. And so today we just need to figure out how to be kind to each other. And they bring that to the table.
They actually incorporate in their service John Lennon's Give Peace a Chance. Mm. It's part of this. It's part of the service. You know, so the kindness, the peace, the love, the equality, all of that is incorporated in their services.
And wearing your other hat, or continuing to wear all
one
the hats,
of them.
Can you talk a little bit more about the message of Hanukkah for you now at this time? You alluded to it a bit here.
So, yeah, because I'm the president, you know, I wear those big shoes. You know, and actually,
I just pay the bills.
That is true. He's the treasurer. You know what? One of the things, we had a small celebration with some friends last night, and one of the readings was to remember, as you're lighting candles, to light a candle for peace and hope, and that every day each of us should think about the light that we can be to bring kindness to the world. And I think that that's how I see Judaism, how I see Hanukkah, is that we are a people who've been here. I read this actually today too. We have survived for 5,780 some odd years. In many ways, because we work towards peace and kindness, and you know, instead of hate. And the people, Marlene Wertheim speaks. She's a woman in Livingston Manor. She was a teacher in Fallsburg, and
Holocaust survivor.
She's a child of the Holocaust, and she saw Hitler marching down the streets, and her family left. She wasn't in a concentration camp, but when she speaks at a ceremony that we have every year to commemorate those lost, she speaks of love and kindness. And I think that's how I see Hanukkah, is just, you know, this is the beautiful light that we can be, and we should just all be that. Mm. And how can we pursue that?
It is the festival of lights, and to be able to shed that light on the world in a positive way, I think, is very, very important.
And then in this podcast, the Levins are sharing that light through their music and the power of their music. Is that what you hope folks take away from this podcast, that just the power of their music across generations, really?
Well, listen, our mission as the STEAM Fund is to support musicians, artists, in the venues where they share their gifts. So this is just one vehicle that we are fortunate to be able to do that with, and to be able to bring the Levins story to light, pun intended, I guess, is really what we want to do, and to have more people know about who they are where they've come from, where they are now, and maybe even what they want their legacy to be.
Well, in episode 5, you learn things about these musicians, but you also learn things about yourselves. So through the course of this, through episode 5, what is it that you've learned in the process of this about, you know, the creative side of this, the musical side of this, that you didn't necessarily anticipate? I mean, you know some of these folks, you're friends with them, you support them, but like just having them in this format, in this forum, I'm sure there are some surprises or learnings along the way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, throughout all of these episodes, you know, we've interviewed some wonderful people. Thurman Barker, who's a jazz drummer here, living here in Jeffersonville, New York, and Josiah Longo from the Slambovian Circus of Dreams, Barbara O'Brien, who was the manager of Levon Helm mm-hmm. for many, many years and behind the Midnight Rambles. And with all of these guests, we have learned so much about them that we didn't know, you know, and that's really what this is about, is for them to be able to tell their stories so that people just get to know a little bit more about who they are and what their roots are and where they've come from.
And maybe be inspired to themselves consider a path like theirs, or encouraged to do that, or at minimum, go hear them and, you know, look them up and say, hey, I want to follow that person. They sound like pretty amazing musicians.
Let's remind folks where they can hear the podcast, where they can find it.
Well, you can find the podcast anywhere where you find your podcast, but you can go to steamfund.org and just click on the podcast, and that will take you to all of the episodes. We're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, as well as YouTube, basically if you Google, what is it?
Steamfund.org, and then look for Full Steam Ahead, because, again, there are many Full Steam Aheads, and there's many Steam things. So steamfund.org and Full Steam Ahead.
This is the one you want to listen to. Can you give us a preview of who's coming up in episode 6?
Yeah, so episode 6 is going to be our local blues king.
Legend.
Slam Allen. Mm. And we're really excited about that. And then the following episode is going to be Miranda Hardy, who's Jack Hardy and
Angie Page's
Angela
daughter.
Page's daughter. So
great. All right. Yeah. That's Judy and Gary Siegel of the Steam Fund and their podcast, Full Steam Ahead. Thank you both for being here, and thank you for being bright lights in the community to carry on with the theme. Happy Hanukkah.
Thanks, Tim.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the latest activities at the Western Sullivan Public Library for kids and families, and how you can stream movies for free. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance in Narrowsburg, whose 21st annual Small Works group exhibition, Art and Sixes, will be on view from November 15th until December 21st. More information at DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. And from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new film releases, live music, and more. Information and schedule at CalicoonTheater.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, this week on Latino USA, how a little boy's diary, saved from the trash, helped two young men share the truth about what happened inside the Tornillo child detention camp in Texas.
Somos fuertes y unidos, y nuestro plan es llegar a los Estados Unidos.
We are strong and united, and our plan is to reach the United States.
That's this week on Latino USA. Thursday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
Hi, I'm Aaron Bendich, and I host Borscht Beat on Radio Catskill. I play the musical traditions of Yiddish folk song, klezmer instrumentals, and Jewish song from the last 2,000 plus years. I hope you are all having a wonderful, happy Hanukkah, and I hope you enjoy whatever other holidays you might be celebrating. From all of us here at Radio Catskill, have a safe and festive holiday season, and a happy new year.
You're listening to Radio Catskill on Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, just because it's the holiday season doesn't mean that the local libraries are slowing down. At the Western Sullivan Public Library, they have programs and events all week long. I spoke to Callison Stratton of Western Sullivan Public Libraries about just a few of the events that are happening this holiday season.
This week we have, it's sort of the end of our programming for the year. We're very excited. On Tuesday the 16th at 6 p.m., we are going to be having our exhibit of from our photography workshop. We've been doing several photography workshops throughout the fall, and we're going to be having a wonderful exhibit at the Jeffersonville branch at 6 p.m. where you can see a lot of the work on display that were created from those workshops. We also have sweet treats for the holidays on Friday at 4:30 at the Jeffersonville branch. That's with our guest presenter, Dale Buchheister, and he's going to be doing some sort of no-bake and light-bake goodies for you to take home, and we can also package them up to give as gifts for the holidays or just take them home to enjoy for yourself. And then on Saturday at 2 p.m. at the Calicoon branch, we are making candles out of beeswax sheets in honor of the winter solstice. So the beginning of the winter season, even though it's already pretty much here.
And that's just a few of the things going on at all of the libraries this week. What do you guys have planned for 2026? Have you already started that planning, or can you let us in on a secret?
Sure, sure. I can definitely give you a little sneak peek. We have already submitted grant applications for our, you know, our summer reading program, which last year was our biggest and, you know, sort of most exciting summer reading program in recent memory. And we're hoping to get some more funding to extend and, you know, bring that program back next year. So that'll be all throughout next summer. We're also going to be trying to make sure we have some offerings to keep people cozy and coming into the library throughout the winter months. We're going to be starting a new dinner and a movie activity. We've been doing movie night once a month, but we're going to be incorporating some fun, you know, dinner aspects to that, where people can come in and they can make a little light dinner with their families and then enjoy a movie while they enjoy their food.
Dinner and a movie at the library. Who knew?
At the library. I know. Who knew? But we have a nice little kitchen in Jeffersonville, and we've been getting a lot of feedback that our food-based programs have been really successful, and people have been really enjoying learning how to make little things like pasta and sweet treats and potions. And so our first one of those is going to be in February, and we're going to be doing dinner and a movie night with Ratatouille.
Fun.
So, yeah. So, and more information you can find on our website about that. And we will announce the date very soon. We've also got a really fun workshop coming up in early January. On January 10th, we're going to be doing trash art. And that is with a local Indigenous queer educator, A. Smith, who is going to be giving us lots of ideas about how to create art out of the, you know, the trash that we produce, that we all sort of tend to produce around the holidays. And we'll be making all kinds of fun things out of like scrap fabric and, you know, recyclable paper. So people are invited to bring their own stuff or sort through what we've got and make something reusable out of the things that we would normally throw away.
Yeah, good reminder to save that wrapping paper and ribbon and bring it
exactly
to the library.
Exactly.
For that event.
Exactly.
One of the things that you guys have, which I think might be helpful for people to remember during these winter months especially, are some apps and streaming services that you offer that will, you know, help people stay up to date on books and then also access some of their favorite films.
Yes. Well, so you can always use your library card to log into Libby, which is one of my favorite apps, most used apps, and you can use it to read magazines, ebooks, audiobooks. It's a really wonderful app. It has a huge collection of books that you can access across all of the libraries in our system. And all you need is your library card, and you can access that for free. You can also use your library card to log into Canopy with a K, and also has Canopy Kids, which has a huge catalog of films and television shows for families who, you know, you don't need a streaming service. Like, you don't need a paid streaming service. All you need is your library card. You can also use your library card for Mango languages to learn a language, if that's one of your New Year's resolutions this year, to work on learning a language. And yeah, it's actually an amazing catalog full of films on Canopy. I was looking on it and sending some recommendations whenever we've closed on snow days. They have like video story times where it will read through a book as a story time, but on film. So it's a nice way to incorporate literacy, even if you're sort of cheating with screen time.
And all of this accessible with your library card. Now, how much do I have to pay you for my library card?
$0, Tim. $0.
What?
If you are a resident of the Sullivan West School District, you can get a Western Sullivan Public Library card for free. Anyone in Sullivan County, you just have to go to your local library and they'll check your address and they'll tell you what library you can sign up for. And if you have a Sullivan County library card, you can use it at any library in the Ramapo Catskill library system, which goes all the way around, you know, from Calicoon to Narrowsburg and Jeffersonville to Middletown, Suffern. It's a really wide system. And if you go into the library and can't find the book that you're looking for, you can find it probably in one of the libraries in our member system.
And if you're listening to us, you know, outside Sullivan County, go check with your local library and see what services they offer too, because the library is a great place to start and get all of this stuff. We've been talking to
absolutely
Callison Stratton from the Western Sullivan Public Library. Callison, thank you so much, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Thanks for having me, Tim.
And that's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. If you're looking for a last-minute holiday gift, go to wjffradio.org and go to our online shop. You can order tees, totes, and hats. In fact, we have a new tote bag. It's kind of cool. Pretty chic. Go to wjffradio.org to find all of that. Also, sign up for our free weekly newsletter. If you sign up now, you'll get that in your inbox this Friday. Stay connected and informed with the latest local news, culture, and more delivered to you for free every Friday to your inbox. Just go to wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we've got the exotic sounds of the Waitiki 7 and the new Les Baxter Orchestra. Plus, the Brass Impact Orchestra will take you to the very threshold of pain. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music is shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
Their music signals the beginning of Christmas for millions around the world. Tune in for a festival of nine lessons and carols, broadcast live from historic King's College Chapel in Cambridge, England. Daniel Hyde directs the music, which in addition to the familiar carols includes a brand new piece by Grayston Ives. I'm Michael Barone. Join us on Christmas Eve for a festival of nine lessons and carols from American Public Media.
Christmas Eve at 10.
And you're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. We'll get a break from the cold later this week, according to the National Weather Service, but we have to get through today first. Some sun and then increasing clouds later, a high 28. Tonight's low under cloudy skies 15. Tomorrow, breezy in the afternoon with a high of 38. Now, Thursday starts the warming trend with a high of 40, 48 by Friday with a few afternoon flurries mixed with some rain possible there too. We're in the 10-day weather forecast time frame here, so we can look ahead. Will it be a white Christmas? Well, it looks as if the 24th might see a couple of flurries and a bit of late night snow. For the 25th, snow and sleet is possible.
The need is growing. More families in our community are struggling to put food on the table. Local food pantries are on the front lines, but they need help. You can make a difference by donating non-perishable food, personal care items, and baby supplies, or by volunteering to support and distribute these donations. It's about nourishing our neighbors. Visit WJFFradio.org for info to help ensure everyone in our community has enough to eat. Radio Catskill, keeping our neighbors connected.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.